Hello, hello. It's Ubuntu Podcast time again, season 12, episode 3. I'm here with Mark. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Alan.
How are you feeling?
I'm not my normal chirpy self, but I'll manage.
Oh, you'll soldier on, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Martin, are you your normal chirpy self?
Just about. A little bit on the tired side, but let's go for it.
Have you been doing late-night leet coding sessions again, Martin?
No, I've been doing late-night watching television sessions. Game of Thrones Season 8 is airing, and my wife and I watched the first two episodes last night.
I see.
That's not what it says here. It says here you've been working on Ubuntu Mate.
Oh, I've changed my mind. I mean, that is true. We'll get to that later, but I've just remembered we've also been watching Game of Thrones Season 8.
Huh, interesting. What have you been doing, Mark?
Well, last week I was at Moodle Moot UK and Ireland.
Ooh.
Which is the big Moodle conference where people from various Moodle-using institutions and companies get together and talk about stuff.
Like give presentations and talks and stuff like that?
Yes, give presentations, have workshops, have some drinks, have a natter over lunch, that kind of thing. So I gave a presentation on, there's a new Moodle mobile app, and I gave a presentation on developing plugins for that. Watched a lot of interesting talks and talked to a lot of interesting people and saw an interesting band playing 90s club tunes on brass instruments.
Ooh. So yes. Rewind a minute. The Moodle is PHP, isn't it? The back end.
Yes.
What's the mobile app written in?
Angular, so it's JavaScript.
Ah, okay.
And bits, but it talks to the your Moodle site via web services, and then you deliver plugins over web services. It's quite clever.
Ooh,
yes.
That sounds far too complicated for my poor little brain to understand.
I'll draw you a diagram.
Oh, thanks. Will we be including that diagram in the show notes? I look forward to that.
Okay. Yes. And I've also been finishing off my doors. You might have heard in episode 0, I've been working on some doors.
I'm glad we're going to get a story about your doors.
It almost went swimmingly until I got to, guess what, the bathroom. And it turned out that the doors I got, which are all the same size, weren't the same size as my bathroom door. So I then had to buy a new door. Which was a bit more work than the other doors because the other doors all had the holes drilled and the hinges attached. So I had to do some drilling and chiseling and painting. But now all of my doors are the right size and the right colour and not 40 years old, which is lovely.
What DIY news should we expect in the future, Mark?
I don't think I can talk about that just yet.
Oh, that's disappointing. Okay.
I've got some DIY news.
Hang on a minute. What's going on?
I haven't really. you know me. I don't do DIY. And on that bombshell, let's get on with the rest of the show. So first up, we've got our community news and events, and we've got a bumper pack of community news, mostly revolving around the release of Ubuntu. You know, that Linux distribution that we talk about all the time?
Never heard of it.
Well, I know. There was a new release just last week. Ubuntu 19.04 came out, which was interesting because it came out on a Thursday, and the releases of Ubuntu are always on a Thursday, but this is on Thursday before Easter, and usually we do releases on a Thursday so that there are people working on a Friday in case anything goes catastrophically wrong.
Oh.
But most of the people in the UK were on holiday on the Friday. Thankfully, nothing went catastrophically wrong that I'm aware of.
No, it was a really smooth release, this one, actually.
Yeah, it was out, like, early.
It was out well on time, and, you know, the release candidate images had been spun, I think, a couple of days before the actual release day, so there was no last-minute respins or anything. Yeah, it was really good, and the release team were very happy to say, well done, everyone. Let's try and do another one like this again next time. Yeah.
So we picked out some of the highlights, should we say, and we'll pick out a few that were interesting. One big thing is there's a big number change. The Linux kernel is now version 5.
Is it one better?
Well, it's lots better, obviously, because it's a whole number bigger, which is a bit arbitrary. But apparently there's some power-saving improvements there, which should be good, especially for laptop users, people who run things on batteries.
Yeah, definitely for laptop users. Yeah. Yeah, performance is up, power usage is down.
Magic.
Well, that's exactly what you want to hear, isn't it? And speaking of performance improvements, there's some much talked about improvements in GNOME 3.32, which is the version of GNOME that it ships with in Ubuntu. And there's lots of people who've been contributing. I understand there's people from Red Hat, people from Endless, and a few people from Canonical and others and community people who've been contributing performance fixes to not just GNOME, but the bits and pieces around it, the foundational components like Mutter and stuff like that, which I'm sure a lot of people are happy to hear because people complain about the performance of GNOME sometimes relative to other desktops. That's good to hear, isn't it?
It is. It's a LAN Mac release, and it follows through to some of the other flavors that we'll get to a bit later as well.
Something else. What else? Fractional scaling support. I don't understand. All of my monitors are 1080p. I even got rid of the one high DPI screen that I had because it was just annoying me.
Right. So this is good if you've got something like the Dell XPS 13. That could do with a scale factor of 1.5 rather than 1 or 2, which were the previous options. 1 being too small and 2 being too big. So good for those smaller displays and also for the very big displays.
Now, do you have to do something to turn this on? Because I've installed 1904 and I tried logging into Wayland and found the setting for scaling and it only had 100 and 200% as the options.
My understanding is it's there by default for Wayland sessions, but you do need to enable it for Xorg. It's an experimental feature in Xorg.
Ah, does it detect if you've got a high DPI screen and only offer it to you then?
Yes.
Ah, that'll be why then.
So you don't have a high
DPI screen? I don't have a high DPI screen, no.
Ah, okay. But you have to, it's experimentally in Xorg, so it's not something that you would see in the dialogue if you were on a 1904 Xorg session.
Correct.
No, but I did log in as Wayland as well, and I didn't see it.
Right. Okay, cool. What else is, my favorite thing. They've, in inverted commas, fixed. Yes, I know it's not broken, but they fixed the Alt-Tab behavior in Ubuntu with GNOME because that was driving me absolutely batty.
Did they fix it just for you?
Yeah, they did. I was the one who moaned the most about it, I think. But lots of people are complaining about it. It's just a bizarre way to switch windows. In GNOME Shell, the default is that when you Alt-Tab, if you just do Alt-Tab, it brings all of the windows of an application to the front. So if you've got like 5 terminals open, they all punch you in the face. Whereas what typically you want to do is switch to an individual window of an application. And that requires a bit of dancing. You have to use Alt-Tab and the Alt-Grave, the key above tab. And they've, in inverted commas, fixed. I'm putting quotes around this because everyone complains at me when I say this is broken behavior and they fixed it because they say it's not broken. That's the way it's designed. Well, it was designed wrong in my book. and that is fixed now in 1904. Alt-Tab works properly, so suck it. What else? Anything else in Ubuntu that I've missed?
I think the install options are interesting this time round. So if you
install
on VMware, it will install the appropriate VMware tools, so all of that VMware integration works out of the box. And if you have an NVIDIA GPU in your computer, when you're installing, there's a tick box that says install third-party drivers for wireless and graphics. And if you tick that box, it will install the NVIDIA proprietary drivers. So when you reboot the next time, you've got all the NVIDIA and CUDA drivers and what have you all set up. That's and ready handy. To go.
So historically, that was the tick box for install codecs and the Flash Player and a few other bits and bobs that are proprietary and we don't ship them on the CD, but if you tick this box, we'll go and figure out how to get them and we'll install them for you, right?
Yeah.
And now the NVIDIA driver is included. I always thought the NVIDIA driver was part of that, but it turns out not. But now it is.
Yes, indeed.
So that's good. The one thing that's missing from that is the support for VirtualBox. Unfortunately, you don't get the VirtualBox extensions added. Only VMware and NVIDIA at the moment.
You get some of the VirtualBox stuff, but not all of it.
It'd be good if that's fixed for 1910, that's for sure.
Let's see if that's on the roadmap, shall we?
Yeah.
One interesting feature I found. It might just be because I haven't installed Ubuntu in several releases, but when you log into the desktop for the first time, it comes up with a thing offering to connect your online accounts, including a Nextcloud account. And logging into that, it mounts your Nextcloud files as a web dav share in Nautilus, and it also connects your calendar up via CalDAV, so you've got all of your stuff in the GNOME calendar.
Wow. That's really cool. That's a nice bit of integration.
Yeah, it doesn't have the sync client set up, which is a bit of a shame, but it's, you know, it's a really good start.
So Ubuntu is obviously the headline act here, but there's a whole load of supporting acts when 1904 came out, and those are the flavors. And are there any highlights from any of the other flavors, Martin?
Well, Ubuntu, they use the Calamari system installer rather than Ubiquiti, which is what Ubuntu and all the other flavors use. And they've had some improvements there, and that now supports full disk encryption, which was one of their headline features there. And then Ubuntu these days now ships the LXQt desktop environment rather than LXDE. And they've had an uplift on that, and there is a laundry list. I encourage you to go and read their release notes, a laundry list of new features and improvements in LXQt.
Great.
So Calamari is used in some other non-Ubuntu Linux. It's like a cross-distro installer, isn't it?
I believe so. I don't know much about it, to be fair. I know that some guys from Debian helped with the fixes that were required to get the full disk encryption stuff working, so maybe it's used in Debian these days. I'm not sure.
That's cool.
What else?
Kubuntu is out, of course, with, as you might expect, all the latest KDE goodness. So a new version of the Qt and KDE frameworks, Plasma 15.5.4 and KDE applications 18.12.3.
I've been hearing a few people telling me they're running Kubuntu, that they were running something else, whatever it might be, whether it's KDE Neon or some other distro, Manjaro with KDE, and they've come back and they're now using Kubuntu instead. I've seen a few people talk about that online, which is interesting. So it's really good to hear that they're all getting the latest KDE stuff from KDE project. That's good to hear. And there's this other little known flavor called Ubuntu Mate.
Is that the green one?
Yes, that's the green one. You know, it's funny when you see screenshots of some of the distros, you know, you can spot them a mile away when they're in the background on a TV program. And if they're in a piece of marketing collateral, Martin's Ubuntu Mate desktop, that bright green thing, you can spot that a mile away. So if that was your only goal,
it was success, actually. It was to quickly spot thumbnails in YouTube videos and reviews. Yes.
Works well, doesn't it?
It does.
So remote desktop awareness, what is that in Ubuntu Mate?
Right. Okay. So this is a new bit of software that's integrated into Mate desktop that understands the context of how Mate is being executed, and it behaves differently when it's being run inside a remote desktop session compared to when it's being run on local hardware. So things like optimizing the compositor, or instead of log out of your session, you know, disconnect your remote session and things like that. So provides better integration with remote desktop stuff, all transparently.
If I remote into my laptop, it won't have my wibbly wobbly windows.
That's true.
Ah, clever.
That's a brilliant concept. But did you steal that from somewhere, or was that an innovation from the Martin Wimpress School of Engineering?
This was an innovation from the X2Go team. It currently supports X2Go the best with other remote desktop solutions being brought up to snuff.
And there's something about Mate Optimus. Is this for people with dual GPU laptops, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, so this dovetails with the NVIDIA proprietary graphics driver installer. If you've gone through that process and you have hybrid graphics, you'll find that that is defaults now to the NVIDIA graphics enabled, and you've got a nice toggle there between Intel and NVIDIA, which actually was Mark's idea when we were having Long Island iced teas in the tea rooms in Basingstoke from a few years ago.
Excellent. That's good to see that come to fruition. And there's something else about the final maintenance release of Mate desktop, and not the shiny one.
You're
not supplying the shiny to your users, Martin.
No, I'm not. No, I'm withholding the shiny. So we're going with tried and tested. The Mate desktop 1.22 release was very, very close to release. And I there were bugs that we had in third-party stuff and we just couldn't ship it. So you get tried and tested, but 1.22 is in Debian Git, and we'll have that probably in 19.10 from next week.
And also, there's some new stuff in your bedfellow of new flavors, relatively speaking, in Ubuntu Budgie. What have they got that's new in 1904?
Everything. It's probably easy to say. I've only picked out a few bullet points here, but their release notes are exhaustive. And I tested all of the flavors, and Ubuntu Budgie was by far my favourite that I installed and played.
Gives you a bit
with.
Of envy, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's nice. It's really nice. It's got lots of lovely features. So they make, you know, they point out that this is one of their biggest releases in a while, and that it's a big step towards their 2004 release, you know. And this is smart. I know what it's like having done a first LTS and then working towards your second. I know that the pressure's on to sort of make that tricky second album, and they're well on their way to doing that. So they've got the latest release of Budgie, so they've done better than me. And that's integrated with the current versions of GTK and GNOME. Probably one of the more interesting changes is they've switched out Nautilus, the file manager, for Nemo. And that's so they can retain the desktop icon support and the split view file manager. Not all of the Nemo extensions are available in the archive yet. So some of those you'll have to enable their backports PPA to get to them. But I imagine they will all be available by the time 1910 comes around. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff. They've got a new theme, new default wallpaper, which looks gorgeous. And Firefox is now the default browser again.
What was it before?
I think it was Chromium.
Okay. Moving on. We're running out of time. Mark, there's Ubuntu Studio 1904 as well.
Yes, and they're saying this is their biggest release in years. We've been talking a bit. There's been a few mentions of Ubuntu Studio. There's been a few sort of issues around its maintenance, but a lot of work been going on around that anyway. It looks like there's some cool new features here, in particular a tool called Kala, which this is one of the sort of the unique points of Ubuntu Studio, is that it's good for audio and video kind of workflows, and Kala is a replacement for JackRack. So Jack is the thing for taking outputs and inputs from various audio applications and plugging them all together, and you can have the sort of graphical pretend rack of mixes and effects things, and Kala is like the new version of that for patching things together digitally.
Nice. And they've got a thing called the Ubuntu Studio Installer. What's that?
Yeah, so that looks like you've got sort of the different components of Ubuntu Studio depending on what kind of things you're working with. So you've got one for audio, one for graphics, one for video.
Right, so you could tailor it. If you're only interested in creating music, then you don't want all the video editors and all that kind of stuff, so you can tailor your install.
Yeah.
That's pretty sweet. I like that.
They've also designed this in such a way that any of the flavors can use it now.
Oh, nice.
Oh, wow.
So you can stick it on top of whatever.
Yeah.
Distro.
So I think that's a very generous, you know, very generous gesture that, you know, now you can take advantage of all of their hard work, regardless of what Ubuntu flavor you're using.
That's pretty sweet. Or indeed, I guess, even if you're running a derivative of Ubuntu, like even if you're not running one of the Ubuntu flavors, I imagine you could use the Ubuntu Studio installer on something that's based off 1904.
Quite possibly.
I haven't tested that, and I doubt they have, but be worth someone out there doing that, because that sounds really cool. And finally, in the flavors, we've got Zubuntu, which also put out a release in 1904. Loads of improvements to 4.13. Some components have either been added, updated, or and I think they've got an updated snapshot of 4.14 in development. So 4.14 is like the latest release of XFCE, isn't it?
It's the next release upcoming, yeah. So this is
They've got a snapshot of that in the archive,
yeah, of bits of it, yeah.
Right, not all of it, but bits of it,
yeah.
And there's a few other bits. They've added apt url, which is, that's the thing that lets you click on a url to a Debian package, right, and it launches the software center.
Yeah.
And the GIMP, do they now ship the GIMP?
They do, apparently. It's what their release notes say. I think they're the only flavor that's shipping the GIMP again. It's 2007 all over again.
We removed it a long time ago. Yeah. But
And that was cool. The end of Ubuntu.
apparently, so said Fabian Scherchel. It's two episodes in a row he gets a mention. And they've also added LibreOffice Impress, which was the one application out of the suite that they didn't ship on the ISO, which is interesting. And that's all of our roundup of the Ubuntu flavors. I'm keen to hear from our listeners. If you run one of the Ubuntu flavors, which one? And have you updated to 1904? Or are you holding back? Are you an LTS holdout? Or are you moving with the times? Or are you already running the next one? What is it? Eon? The 1910 release? Yeah, that's not ready yet. Don't upgrade to that. But yeah, let us know what your feedback is about 1904, because we're interested to hear it. And finally, in our community news, there's one event that is worth mentioning, because by the time you listen to this, it's just about to start, and that is Linux Fest Northwest, April 26th to the 28th, 2019, and it's at Bellingham Technical College in Washington, USA, and guess who's going?
Me.
Me and Martin are going to be at Linux Fest Northwest. Please come and say hello and tell us about your experience with anything and everything, and we'll have a chat, have a beer, have a coffee. Maybe there's a barbecue or something going on. I think there's a party on one of the evenings. But yeah, do come and say hello, because we love meeting people who listen to the show, and it'd be lovely to chat to you. And that's all the community news and events for this week. And now it's time for the news. First up in the news, Martin, over to you.
Apparently, we have a new leader of the Debian project, and that would be Sam Hartman.
Mm-hmm.
So he's just been voted in, and he has 1 year in the role, so until April 2020. And a key part of his manifesto was to keep Debian fun.
Keep Debian fun. That's not a phrase I've heard ever before.
I think it's a good idea, though.
Yeah.
Oh, it's totally the best idea. It does feel sometimes like it's very easy to pick basically any thread on any mailing list that's in the Debian project and point a finger at it and laugh, because it's just either ridiculously long and argumentative, people picking on something which seems like ridiculous, but Debian has been going so long and has punched out so many releases, they must be doing something right. And I can see how making it just a bit more fun might be nicer, so long as they keep, you know, to the standards that they've been keeping to for the last, 20 plus years.
It's a difficult balance to strike, because Debian is sort of steeped in process and policy, which by definition is probably not fun.
I don't know. Some people's definition of fun.
Well, really, that's not somebody I want to have cocktails with at a drinks party.
I tell you what, though, it does strike me that 1 year isn't a very long term for the leader of a project like Debian. You'd expect it to be a bit longer.
Yeah, I thought, considering the release cadence of Debian, which is about 2 years, 2.5 years, you know, more or less, you would have thought that the DPL should be in for like a release cycle, maybe.
Hmm.
I'm pretty sure there's been some people who've been voted in multiple times who've had more than 1 year.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
But if they choose to stand, because I don't believe Chris Lamb, who was last year's DPL, I don't believe he stood this year.
Mm-hmm.
So that wasn't an option.
But he'd been DPL for 2 years, right?
Yes, I think so.
Yeah.
Hmm. It's weird going when you look at Debian with this, in inverted commas, churn of leadership, and you compare that to Ubuntu, which has a self-appointed benevolent dictator for life. Like, those two opposite ends of the scale. It's interesting to see how the two projects are run very differently, but also very much the same in many ways. Cool. Next up on the news, Scientific Linux has announced a move to base on CentOS. So Scientific Linux has been around for a very long time, since 2006, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But it has roots in something called Fermi Linux, dating back to 2004. So it's been around. Yeah, Fermi Lab, apparently. I think it was an internal Linux distro that they made for their labs. And Scientific Linux was born out of that, with collaboration with other universities and labs and so on. And it's a collaboration between, Scientific is a collaboration between Fermilab, CERN, some German research center that I can't pronounce the name of, DESY, and a university in Zurich called ETH. But they're continuing to support Scientific Linux 6 and 7, but they're not going to make a Scientific Linux 8. All the work that they do, they're going to move over to CentOS, because I think it must have been a fair amount of work, because they do what CentOS used to do, which is take the source of Red Hat and strip out all the branding and then rebuild the whole thing, and that's a whole new distro. So it must have been quite a bit of work to support that. So it makes sense. The current releases are still supported. Scientific Linux is supported till 2020, and Scientific Linux 7 is supported until 2024. But yeah, anything future is based off CentOS. I've never seen it in the wild, but then I don't hang around with scientists much. Mark, what's next?
Well, you might have heard about a new whizzy expensive phone called the Samsung Galaxy Fold, where the screen folds in half. Now, it turns out this is a really bad idea. Some models have gone out to reviewers who have been, you know, using them like you'd use a normal phone, and they've been breaking left, right, and center.
Wow. It's funny. It turns out plastic display, when you fold it over and over again, not reliable.
Yeah. So there's been a few problems that have cropped up. The first was that, it creases in the middle, and after a few folds, some of those have just broken along the crease. So one half of the screen works, one doesn't. The one that I found the most bizarre was that there's, you know how when you get a new phone, you have that sort of screen protector on the front, and you know, yep. It's, you know, you kind of keep it there for as long as you can resist just peeling it off because it's so satisfying to do. Well, it turns out that the one on the Galaxy Fold isn't a screen protector. It's actually a layer of the screen. So when you peel it off, the whole thing breaks.
That is just comedy gold.
Arguably, it is exactly a screen protector in that it protects the screen from being broken by people peeling off the top. Like,
I've seen a few photographs of the thing that's been pulled off as well. Oh, dear. Yes. Oh dear, Samsung.
Yeah, and there's been instances of debris somehow getting under the screen, perhaps around the hinge, and then pushing through from the back and killing some of the pixels. Basically, it doesn't seem to have stood up to the test of basic usage.
$2,000.
Yes, $2,000.
Wow. It'll be interesting to see how the other vendors who are bringing their foldable phones to market in the coming months fare in this regard. Because this could have been Samsung's only chance at getting a foothold in this market.
Yeah, there's one other. Is it Huawei or one of the others that has one that folds the other way?
Yeah.
It folds so the screen's outwards. On the outside, not the inside. Yeah.
I think they've got the design right. Of the two that I've seen, I think Huawei have got it right, because they've effectively created this double-sided setup. It looks really nice.
I just feel like folding phones is 3D TV. Mm-hmm. It's just, and in your case, VR. It's just technology that doesn't need to exist. Although a couple of them reviewers who I watched were using it, and they said, once you get past that, all of the, you know, the technical foibles with it, it's actually a really nice device to use, because you open it up and you've suddenly got more screen real estate to swipe up and down, and you can get more on the screen, and you can do split screen stuff that nobody ever does. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's an interesting device, and someone somewhere needed to make one to prove whether you can or can't make them. And
now we know you can't, and let's all move on.
Yes, let's move on.
There's always room for more feedback. On our website, each episode has its own comments, so post yours on ubuntupodcast.org.
And that's the end of episode 3. Thanks, everyone, for listening and making it this far through the show. Do get in contact if you've got any feedback. We read it out on the next episode or a future episode, or we might not read it out at all, but we certainly read it. Next week, we're going to have some Command Line Love, and we'll also have a discussion on advocating for Linux desktop. Should you be doing it? Find out next week.